Last week, I was talking with Chief Tom Turner and about Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and I thought it'd be a good idea to bring in Bob Teeter from SOS. And so, Bob, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Obviously, we want people to be aware of this all the time, but there's a special focus, you know, on the month of October put on this. Why so now?
Well, October's always been the Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and so we kind of do a blitz to try and educate the community on what domestic violence is, to get them to understand that it does happen in our community. It happens all too often. It's become kind of a, in some ways, accepted part of our culture. And so we're just trying to get the word out there and not only educate what domestic violence is and, you know, kind of get the message out that it's wrong, but also to people who are going through it, that there is help out there.
Does domestic violence always mean physical altercations?
No. So in legal terms, domestic violence can include, you know, we have spouses that have been, you know, held against their will. Basically, they're not allowed to go out without permission. You know, it's abuse. Not allowing them to have any access to funds, controlling who they talk to, when they talk to, controlling their access to, say, technology, different things. It's abuse. So it can take many different forms. But traditionally, what a lot of people see and what a lot of people think of when they think of domestic violence is the physical abuse. And that is the most prevalent part of domestic violence is the physical abuse.
Is there instances where both parties can be equally involved in
Absolutely.
Abusive situations?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of dysfunctional relationships out there. And we oftentimes see that. Part of our challenge at SOS is that if someone comes and seeks services from us, we have to serve that person, even though they've committed some of the violent acts themselves, even though there may be, you know, alcohol involved, they're both drinking, they've both been beating each other up. Legally, we are required to service that person. And then due to current laws, we cannot serve the other party. We will suggest to the other person where they can get legal help explain some of their rights to them. But we can't serve that person.
How many years have you actively been involved in situations like this?
So I've been with SOS for 8 years. I'm coming up on about a year and a half as executive director. And so when I came into working at SOS, I really didn't understand what domestic violence was. I had some idea of it, having been with Boys and Girls Clubs for 15 years prior to that. So it's given me a new perspective on what's really going on in homes, particularly in homes where children's involved.
Have you ever come across a situation where you have two good people, but because of who they are when they're together in a situation that becomes volatile, whereas separate, it's not always like that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we see that often. It's, you know, it's just like any other form of abuse. It comes down to a need to control. And when they feel they're out of control, they lash out. They find some way to try and control the situation. And unfortunately, a lot of times that becomes an abusive of way of handling the situation. And sometimes that frustration boils over into violence.
What kind of services does SOS provide, you know, to help men or women who are involved in this kind of a situation?
So the first thing that we do is, and I'm glad you said men, because we do have male victims. I actually had somebody come into the office who had to pick up some information, and they apologized for coming in because they didn't think men were allowed at our facility. And let them know that absolutely, you know, we used to be called the Women's Center up until about 15, 20 years ago. But we do, about a third of our victims are male. So it happens to everyone regardless of gender. But when we do have someone come in, the first thing we're going to do is make sure that they're safe, try and address that safety issue. And then we will go through and talk about the different services we have. We have access to legal aid. If they need to relocate for safety reasons, we have resources to do that. If they've been injured due to a violent act, we have resources to help them with those medical bills. There are ways that we can also keep their information confidential. It's kind of our earmark is that we are very, very confidential. We are actually what's called mandated non-reporters, which means we're bound by the Department of Justice to not report anything that's going on without the express written consent of the victim. So, for example, you know, like you were talking about, sometimes there's a situation where both people have been violent. There might be drugs, might be alcohol involved, and they're fearful of getting help because of that element that's part of the relationship. And so by being a non-reporter, they can now get help without fear of any kind of legal reprisal. So that's the idea of that. At first, when I was told about that, going from being a mandated reporter to a non-reporter, I had a hard time with it. But then I saw how people were able to get help that wouldn't have gotten help before. It's a huge benefit. We even had students that have come to us who've been sexually assaulted that did not report to their school counselors because they knew their parents would be notified and they didn't want their parent notified. We even had a situation where it was actually a family member that had sexually assaulted and they didn't think their parents would understand and were afraid to get their parents involved. And so they sought us out and we were able to get them help. So we get them connected to counselors. If there's been like maybe, property that's been damaged due to violent acts, we have resources to get that that compensated, and so just a wide variety of things. But what we do when we present these options to them, we're just presenting options to them. We want to empower those victims to be able to kind of take back their lives. So it's really, as far as what the next step is, it's really driven by the victim. We're just here to present the resources to them, give them support, let them know that they're not alone, that you know, someone believes them, they are supported. Here's the resources. They make the decision what the next step is.
Does someone need to have financial support in order to use your services?
No. All our services are free. Everything that we do is free to the public.
And again, you know, October is the month when we put a lot of focus, a lot of education mm-hmm. into this. What is – I know a lot of people probably – their first step, it's very pensive. They're not sure what they want to do. As you mentioned, there might be other things involved. Or they just might be afraid, period, because of how it will look on them.
Right.
What kind of advice can you give to those people to make that first step?
Well, and we understand that statistically, it's on average someone's going to try and leave their abuser 7 times. That means they're going to keep going back and forth. Because to leave someone who's been in control of their lives, maybe providing the roof over their head, a lot of times mothers will not report domestic violence because they're afraid of losing that housing for their children. They're afraid of losing that provider who's been taking care of their kids financially. So they're afraid to make that report. And so just kind of getting the message out that there are people who care, that there is help, and let them know they're not alone. It's not something that only they're going through. Other people have gone through it. We have a support group meeting that happens Tuesday night, so other survivors can be, sharing their stories, talking about their successes, their trials, and encouraging each other. We have anywhere from, 4 or 5 to as many as 16 that's been at a support group meeting.
That's pretty cool that there is that kind of support out there for this.
Yeah.
You'd had a walk on Sunday. In Old Town there. Mm-hmm. And is there any other events planned for the month?
Yeah, so we have several speaking engagements around town. The March has always been kind of our kickoff event. We have a new video that has been made where we actually have some survivors telling our story and talking about how they got help. We'll be sharing that with different community groups that we're speaking at throughout the month. We also have a slide that's being shown at City Light Cinema. So during the previews, there's some information that's being shown on the slide, encouraging people who may be going through it that there is help. And kind of what our focus is this month is getting people to understand that domestic violence does affect everyone. It affects our economy. It affects your neighbor. It affects the children's developments. It touches everyone, whether they realize it or not. Some interesting things that a lot of people don't know how it affects the community is that generally women pay a higher medical insurance rates. That's largely driven to the occurrence of domestic violence. Mm. We also 60% of women on average lose their jobs because of domestic violence. So there's an effect on the businesses. A lot of people will call in sick when they're actually hiding bruises. They're waiting for those bruises to go away so nobody's asking questions.
So definitely economic impact.
Yeah. I think last year nationally $8 billion in lost revenue was reported as a direct result of domestic violence. $8.3 billion is spent on medical and legal services for domestic violence victims. Mm. So, yeah, there's a huge economic impact. You have a lot of kids that are having to flee dangerous situations, so there's an interruption of their education. And just the fact that they're even going through that stress, you know, hearing one of their parents screaming and yelling in the other room, that affects their development. That affects their academic performance. I think last year in Oregon, there were 256 teens and over 1,600 children that were forced to flee their homes due to domestic violence. That's just in the state of Oregon alone.
That's a lot. That's too many.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one's too many.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. All right. Well, how can folks get a hold of you? I mean, that's the important part. I mean, we want people to get help. We have to know how
to get a hold of you. Right. So we have staff that are on call 24/7. We have a crisis line that's 541-997-4444. We have volunteers that operate those phones. And then if it's a situation where we need an advocate to respond, then they put the phone call through to the advocate. If someone you know, calls the police and police arrive, they can request of that officer to have an advocate present. The police department and also hospital has direct numbers to us, and they can call us and we'll be there within 10 minutes. We are located on 12th Street between the Elks Lodge and the Nazarene Church. We're there Monday through Friday. Our regular open office hours are between 9 and 4, so people can come anytime during those hours. If they want to come after those hours and they notice that somebody's there, we will open the door if someone's knocking on there to get help. We have a Facebook page. We've been contacted. That's kind of an interesting trend I've seen recently, that we have we're receiving texts to our crisis line number, which we now can do that. We didn't do that up until a year ago. But we also have people send us messages through email and through our Facebook chat pages to get help.
Wow. So, yeah, it's really a given, broadened the field and how people can respond.
Yeah. And one of the advice I give to people who, if you know someone who's going through it, try not to intervene, because if you talk to any officer, they said the most dangerous calls they ever go on is a domestic violence call, because they don't know how people are going to react if guns are in the home. It's just such an unpredictable situation. And the best thing you can do for someone, you know, that's going through it is to just let them know that there is help. There is people who care. Point them in our direction. Because you don't want to put a target on your back, because that abuser may retaliate against you for helping them out. So it's just really not a safe situation. We started a campaign last year called, our Life Preserver campaign. And so we have these buttons that now police officers, EMS personnel, school district counselors, it's a Life Preserver with our crisis line number on there. And it's for those mandated reporters to just kind of have that conversation that if they're going through something or, you know, and they don't want to share, there is somebody that's private and confidential that they can talk to and just to get some information, if anything, get some advice on what direction to go. And that's been very effective.
October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Bob Teeter, SICE Outreach Services, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Also on this edition of Our Town, we had an interview scheduled with the folks from Grey Gardens, the new production from The Last Resort Players. Due to time constraints, we cannot play it here for you, but you can find it right now on Coast Radio's website or on our Facebook page, kcst.com, or you can look us up on Facebook. That's this edition of Our Town for Coast Radio. I'm George Henry.